Hey everybody, welcome to today's episode of the Comedy at the Carlson Cast. I am not Ross Johnson. You're welcome. Today's show is episode 102 with our guest Rocky Laporte. I should also remind you that today's episode is brought to you by the good folks over at Sapori Cafe and Catering, located right here in Rochester, New York. They should be your first choice for your catering needs, or you could have lunch at the Powers Building Atrium. Also, we're brought to you by our friends at Three Heads Brewing, the makers of Rochester's favorite beer, The Kind. Remember, do good things and always be kind, especially to your chubby cherub-faced host, Vinny Paulino. Hey, everybody.
Oh, I thought you were talking about my cherub face.
I'm way better at Ross than Ross are reading this stuff.
This is the very first episode we're both clean shaven. It's got to be.
I feel weird about it.
Yeah, I'd feel weird too.
You're a cherub-faced host and you're a droopy, melting candle-faced host.
Yeah, I developed a second chin I did not know I had.
Well, you know, shave more often. You could avoid these things.
Yeah, no.
Big show today. Rocky Laporte is in town. He is performing four more shows here at Comedy at the Carlson. The text line is open if you feel like communicating with us or him during the show. Feel free to text us 585-484-0265. Now, Rocky has an interesting history. This guy has toured with two of my all-time favorite comedians. He's done USO tours. He's played all over the country. And from what I understand, he got shot in a truck hijacking. So
save it for the show, Vinny.
I'm just saying. We got a lot of interesting things to discuss with Rocky Laporte today. Yeah. So make sure you stay tuned.
This is probably only our fourth guest that's ever been shot.
Yeah, I'm trying to think who else might have been shot. Sklar brothers.
Yeah, those Sklar brothers. They've taken a couple bullets.
Yeah, I'm sure some people
They're like 50 Cent.
Yeah, they're like, covered in scars.
Yeah.
So we're excited. Rocky's going to be here. Text your questions. Thank you all for tuning in. We had an incredible week of downloads. Lots of new listeners. So we're very excited about that. Thank you. Continue to tell your friends. Make sure you leave a review. Don't be a jerk.
Are we number one in Tanzania yet?
Nope. Still number three.
No, those Tanzanians need to get on it.
We slipped down a little bit. But just tell a friend. Don't be a jerk. Now, it is getting to be that time of year where we are getting ready for a very special event coming up the beginning of 2020. You can hit my PC, Joe.
Christmas?
Nope. I said the beginning of 2020, not the end of 2019, stupid. Showmageddon's coming up again.
Showmageddon.
We are pumped for Showmageddon. It's going to be back here at the Rickles Room at Comedy at the Carlson. This is a comedy showcase showdown where we allow, you can just hit me. Yeah, there you go. We allow you to pitch a show.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to produce a comedy show and you have an idea of the comics that you want to hire, what you want to do, we're going to set you up in our Rickles Room.
Whatever weird stuff you want to pitch.
We'll make it worth your while.
Worst that's going to happen is we'll say no.
The grand prize winner gets a booking of four more showcases for the year of 2020.
Yeah.
Which is a very nice prize.
Opportunity to make some coin.
Yes, it is. So if you are interested, you can email us your proposal at carlsoncast@gmail.com, or you can find more information just at our website, carlsoncast.com. Now, I believe we're going to take a minute here. Learn about the shows that are coming up here at Comedy at the Carlson in the next few weeks. And then Rocky Laporte will be joining us in studio. So hang in there. Brian's going to talk at you.
Hello, everybody. Lots of cool shows coming up here at Comedy at the Carlson. Check out our schedule at carlsoncomedy.com. We have Sky Sands, November 2nd. That's tomorrow night. Very, very funny, man. And Bobby Slayton, November 7th through the 9th. And November 8th, Mike Racine, one night only in the Rickles Room. Gary Goldman, November 14th through the 16th. And November 21st through the 23rd, Vicky Barbalak.
Beautiful Vicky Barbalak.
Thanksgiving Eve, Dr. Dirty John Valby. It's November 27th. Friend of the show, Chris Allen, November 29th and 30th. And December 5th through the 7th, Christopher Angiola. Sam Morrill on December 12th through the 14th. April Macy, December 19th through the 21st, one of my favorites. Mike Cannon, December 20th. And December 26th through the 28th, Rich Voss. Pairs open is very funny.
And one night only.
One night only. New Year's Eve, John DeCrosta. Tim Meadows, January 2nd through the 4th. And January 16th through the 18th, Trevor Wallace. Need tickets? Visit carlsoncomedy.com or call 5854-COMEDY, and we will see you all at the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am thrilled to welcome our guest this week into the studio. He's the only guy I've ever met who's got an applause break on The Tonight Show. Give it up for Mr. Rocky Laporte. Brian, clap. Woo! Clap, Brian.
I am. I was turning my phone off.
Brian's not thrilled.
I was turning my phone off. Sorry.
Listen, you can't tell because his face, we've already established, looks like a melting candle, but he's thrilled to see you, Rocky. Don't
I am.
Fool you. It's great to have you in Rochester. I heard you risked your life to get here on a plane yesterday.
Man, that was a bumpy ride. That was crazy, you know? Like, the wind, you guys were having like...
It was insane last night.
Yeah, I think Toto flew by my hotel window. Not the dog.
The band.
The whole band.
I like on the flight they go, hey, this is what they actually say this. They go, in the event of a water landing, they're calling this an event now. Like you could buy tickets to it or something like that, you know? They go, in the event of a water landing, when you're flying, like an event to me is like going to the circus or like seeing boobs, not landing in a lake, you know?
My favorite flying joke was Billy Connolly did a joke about, he said, in the event of a crash, you're supposed to put your head between your legs. And he goes, they should just say, in the event of a crash, we're going to go in the ground like a fucking dart.
Then they go, if you're unwilling or unable to get out of the plane. Who's unwilling to get out of an airplane that's like sitting in a lake? You know what I mean? You're like, I'm just going to sit here.
Done. I don't know why they even bother with all that. Just like, at in the that event point, of a crash, we're all going
to
die.
I welcome my lungs being filled with fluid as opposed to being burnt alive.
Jet fuel.
Yeah.
It was hard to drive a car last night in that wind. I can't imagine what it must have been like in a plane.
It was in the top five scary flights that I've had, you know?
Yeah.
Well, we're glad that you made it. There are four shows left this weekend. You get your tickets right now, carlsoncomedy.com. Rocky, I got a lot of questions I got to ask you, sir. And the one thing that I learned about
you—this looks like a police interrogation room, just so you know, with the brick
turn
walls
his extra
and everything
light
like
on.
This.
Yeah. Turn his extra light on. No, you used to drive truck.
Yes, sir.
And you got shot driving truck.
Yeah.
I need to know what happened here.
You say like a Russian. You
driving
drive
truck.
Truck.
Yeah.
You drive truck.
Nobody talks like that.
You're Italian. Come on.
You drove truck.
You drive
he
truck.
He used to be a truck driver is the sentence you're looking for.
Listen, over the road, I was trying to talk like a trucker. I was trying to be cool.
We don't talk like that.
All right. Fine. I'm in timeout.
I drive truck.
No wonder that guy shot you. Leave me alone. What happened?
Please, no shoot. I drive truck. No shoot. Oh, he's mad now. Come on. I'm kidding. These are jokes. Come on.
Jump in. Too soon. No, I'm just kidding. Soon. What happened?
I was coming back. I was doing a run from Milwaukee. I was coming back to Chicago, and these guys, they held me up, and they wanted my wallet. I only had $8 on me, you know? And so I got shot, and the guy shot me in my leg, and he takes off. And I used to be, you know, I was on the radio all the time. And I was used to make jokes. So it was one of those, like, boys who cried wolf thing.
Yeah,
When I called in my boss, I go, Mike, I got shot. And he goes, yeah, that's nice, Rock. Just bring the truck in. I go, no, I'm serious. I got shot, you know. And so then they came over and they took me. And the weird thing about that, he goes, hey, I'm going to put you on a better route.
Right.
A better route. I'm not even making this up. I started delivering to prisons. I delivered to like Joliet and Pontiac and Staple. That's a better route than what I was doing.
Well, you know, at least they might shiv you with something. They don't have guns.
Somebody's keeping an eye
guard
on
the back.
Yeah.
You know what's so funny? I was just telling Weeze this. This really happened. I was in a trailer with this guy one time, you know, and we're loading and unloading stuff, and you know, he's an inmate. And he's a big guy, you know, thick neck and tattoos. And we're standing this close, you know, and he was asking me how it was on the outside. And I go, what'd you do, man? He goes, my wife was messing around on me. He goes, so I chopped her head off.
Jesus.
Yeah. And I go, women.
Right.
What else do you say?
What do you say to a guy like that? He's like, "Hey, your brother." I'm like, "Ugh, boy,
you don't
want to
say
here.
You should not have done that."
Yeah,
sir.
Yeah.
You don't just say.
I'm very disappointed.
Shame on you. Yeah, yeah.
At this point, I say
you belong in jail.
You want me to get those boxes? I'll just get the boxes.
Yeah, yeah.
I got the boxes. Don't.
Why don't you take a rest? Yeah. Take some time off.
Yeah. Just stay. Yeah. Listen, you do you relax. Over there. I'll stay alive over here.
Yeah.
So, that's an interesting background. You're doing truck. How did you get into stand up? From truck driving.
You know what's so weird, man? Like, I don't know. I always had these ideas in my head when I was a kid, you know? And I actually used to pull an 18-wheeler over on the side of the road if something funny came to me and write it down. But I thought, well, maybe I could use it at a party or something to, you know, make my friends laugh. Mm-hmm. That's how dumb I was. I never thought you could do that for a living. Like, I remember seeing, like, Carlin and Cosby and all those guys growing up, like, watching them on TV. But yeah. I always thought, like, I didn't know if those guys had day jobs or they just did this once in a while.
Yeah.
I never thought that you can make a living at doing this, you know? And I don't know. I guess it was the course I was supposed to take, you know?
Well, at some point, every comedian steps on stage for the first time. Like, where did you go? Where did you go? How did you decide this is, like, what I'm going to do?
Well, when I was driving a truck, I used to deliver furniture to this one mall.
Okay.
And there was a lady there, her name was Betty Griffin. And I always used to make her laugh. And she's the one, she goes, "Did you ever decide," she goes, "you should be a comedian, you know?" Mm-hmm. And it was almost like a revelation. It was almost like it was one of those aha moments. Like, I never thought. So literally that day, I called up the Funny Bone. It was in Schaumburg, Illinois. And I go, "Wait, when's your open mic night?" And they go, "Well, it's tonight, you know." So I went there, and you had 5 minutes. They give you 5 minutes. And, man, it was just like, it was like a drug. Like, it was like, I never had a rush like that before.
You're not the first comic who's described it like a drug.
That first laugh.
Yeah. And I felt like I was creating magic or something like that. It was like an amazing thing to make people laugh, you know. But I remember when I was a kid making my relatives laugh, like at a real young age.
Yeah.
I don't even remember what I was saying, but I just thought, oh, like I felt like I had this, I don't know, you felt like a magician, like you just did a trick, like you pulled a rat, like, how'd they do that? And I just remember it was like a neat feeling, like being able to make people laugh, you know?
So you always kind of like had the aptitude for it. And you decide, you know.
What's your language, all right?
Yeah, I'm listening.
The big words.
you aptitude.
you saw comics on TV. You saw all this stuff, and then like when you go and you actually do it, now all of a sudden, you got it in your veins, and you got to keep doing it because that's kind of how that works. For those of you who don't know, the uninitiated, I'm sorry for the filthy talk. For the uninitiated, you got to understand what happens to you. You don't realize it. When you do an open mic and you do well, it really does hit you like a drug. You're like, so when's the next one? Is it this week? Oh, are there more of these in
town?
Chasing
the dragon, right? Chasing the,
exactly
like a heroin,
right.
You're chasing the dragon.
Exactly right. So that's the story for Rocky, man. It hit you, and you decided to keep going with it. So how old were you when you got on stage for the first time?
I was 29. It was kind of late, you know. I was 29 years old, and I was driving a truck, and I had three kids at the time.
Yeah, I know you have four kids now, so you had three kids at home.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I was like, man. But you know what? I was only making about $300 a week driving a truck, and I was busting my ass, like loading and unloading freight. And that's what MCs were, huh?
Not an easy job.
No, it was hard.
And you make like negative $40 in an open mic, so you know.
Exactly. So I go, I'm going to do this. But no, I think MCs at the time were paying $300. I go, if I can make that same money and not break my back, you know. But then I moved. I won a couple contests. And, you know, they were paying middle acts like $800 to $1,000 back then. It was in the boom.
What year are we talking about?
88.
Okay, that's definitely the boom.
Yeah. So middle acts were making $800 to $1,000 and they were flying you in to these places. It was just like it was a different time. And then when you headline, you know, you went up after that. And I just wanted better for my family. And I liked, you know, what I was doing, you know.
So you hit it right at that sweet spot.
Yeah. It was so weird. I was on stage. It was my sixth time on stage. And it was a local comedy competition.
Right.
And I won it. I didn't even know what I was doing. And the thing was, you got to go to Vegas and perform out there at some little casino. But I knew then my life was changing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
how'd the casino gig go?
It was, you know, it was like an open air casino, and everybody's in there gambling and talk. It was
People
kind of.
don't realize that the casinos, people think playing the casino is kind of a ritzy thing. It's like, no, the casino will say to you, okay, you are on for 20 minutes. You are not on for 21 minutes. You are
Yep.
on for 20 minutes because these people need to get back to the slots.
Gambling,
They just need a breather.
yep. So they make you work sometimes, and like they ain't the happiest
Yeah,
people.
deal
They just,
cards. They make you
yeah, I had to sweep up. It was awful. But
clean out the ashtray.
yeah,
So
you know,
you're on.
I had a little waitress outfit I had to wear. It was awful.
It doesn't sound too bad. Probably
Oh,
probably breathed. So
okay. Okay.
you go you go you go and you're doing this open air casino. What
Yeah.
was that like when you were just starting out your
It was
seventh time
horrible. All
on
the slots
stage?
are going off, and people are. It wasn't even like enclosed. It was like in a lounge. It was like in the lounge of the casino, which is awful. Like if, you know,
Yeah,
comedy's
just kind
not.
of in the corner by the bar.
Yeah, pretty
Yeah.
much, you know, and people are yelling, and hey, I got it 150 cents, you know. It was
Yeah.
just one of those gigs, you know.
Yeah.
But and then I won another. I won this. It was called the WGN Comedy Bowl. It was a local thing in Chicago.
Big network, big channel.
Yeah, it was a
Yeah.
super station at the time, and I came in second there my first year doing comedy. And then in 1990, I won the Johnny Walker Talent Competition, and it was like a national thing with Bud Friedman from the Improv.
I give myself a Johnny Walker award every Friday night around 7:30.
Around Johnny Red.
Yeah.
around noon, let's be honest.
Listen, pal, I'm not
Start
you.
earlier.
Brian's half in the bag already this
Yeah,
morning.
huh?
Yeah.
It's only 10 o'clock. Nice.
Yeah, it's a
Good.
holiday weekend.
It was Halloween last night. I haven't
We have a
sobered up.
skeleton. We have a
He's still drunk from last night.
We have a skeleton crew today because everybody celebrated Halloween just a
A
little
little
too
bit too
hard.
much
Is that
last
right?
night, yeah.
Except for the responsible ones that are here today. And I can't even believe you.
And me.
And Brian. So, Rocky, you won these contests. You're in the middle of the comedy boom, 88, 89. It's such a different environment for comedy now than it is then. I was talking to a comic that I know, and I asked him, like, what do you think the differences are, like, on the road now? And he goes, now there is no road. Like, it's just a completely different scenario and different scene for a lot of people. What would you describe the biggest differences right now between?
Well, I think, you know, and I hate to sound like the old guy,
Yeah.
but you know, back then, like a lot of people today are getting famous with like a 15-minute viral video, but they don't have the 45 minutes to fill to do a show,
Yeah,
you
right.
know? Like they got that 10, 20 minutes, but they're selling out. And you know, like the owners, they'll go, oh, he's selling out, we'll put him in, you know? But back in the old days, like you had to go state to state and learn your craft.
Yeah.
Like you had to learn to work the South and Boston and Montreal. Like you had to, that's how you became well-rounded. It was like going to college, you know, you had to earn your bones on the road, you know.
I feel like that in itself right there is a lost art right now with the young up-and-coming comics.
I agree. I agree.
And I know Vinny and I are both kind of old school that way too.
Don't let me in with
I
you.
think we came in right at the end of, I think we were taught by people who still thought that way.
Yeah,
Does that make sense, Vin?
I'm not talking to you right now. But yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah.
One guy in particular, a guy we talk about on the show, a guy named Danny Liberto, was a booker up here. He booked all up into Canada, Pennsylvania, all around. And he was the most old school guy I've ever been around. Still is the most old school guy I've ever been around in my life. And he would just hammer you if you screwed
Is that
up.
right? Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it was like, this is what you do. This is how you behave. This is what you do. When you go check into the hotel, this is when you perform. Like
Oh,
he would
wow.
go
Yeah.
down the list and just try to make everybody as professional as they possibly can be. And everybody was like, this guy's completely insane. But if you learned it, you were much better off in general.
Yeah,
Yeah, you know what?
definitely.
Yeah, I agree. When did you guys start? What year?
I started about 10 years ago. You're a little longer
Yeah.
than that.
Yeah. I don't know, 15-ish. I don't know, 2006, 2007, somewhere in there.
There was this guy that owned the club in Chicago, the Comedy Cod. His name was Ed Hellenbrand. And I was moving up kind of quick. I won some contest. And he always made me MC. He goes, I know you're middling and, you know, co-headlining at some places. He goes, but he said, MCing, he goes, it's like building a building. He goes, if the foundation ain't strong, like your building's not going to be good. I think that was some of the best advice I ever got because he goes, one, once you become a good MC, you could do anything. He goes, like, middle's the easy spot, you know? Like, that's the soft spot.
The best spot. Yeah, you get to go to the bar and watch the rest of the show.
Yeah, they're warmed up, you know, they're not dropping checks. And he told me that, and I believe this is true. He goes, once you get really good, like, once you become a headliner, the next step is you go back to opening for big acts. And that's exactly what happened. Like, you start opening for, like, Louis Anderson and the Righteous Brothers. Like, you literally go back to MCing. And you can only do that if you have those skills, you know? And if you become a great MC, you end up hosting shows like how Billy Crystal and, you know, Chevy Chase, all those guys, Steve Martin, they're hosting award shows. Like, only that's a muscle that I think everybody wants to move out of the MCs. Like, I want a middle, I want a headline. But I'm glad that guy kept me MCing. Like, it gave me, it built a good structure, I think.
I've always felt in a small way that it's a bit unfair that the MC gets paid less than the feature when that's the hardest job on the show.
In Canada, you do it the other way around. Exactly. Did you know that?
They pay well, yeah, I tell people this all the time. It's traditionally the two strongest acts on the show are the MC and the headliner.
Yeah, you buried a weak guy in the middle.
Yeah. Right?
That's what they do in Canada.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
They pay more. The MC gets paid more than the feature in Canada. I think that's not a bad.
That's the way it should be, I think.
Yeah. No?
They don't understand bacon. I'm not going to listen to them about comedy. I'm just saying.
It's ham.
Yeah, it's ham. You're not going to tell me what we pay our MCs here?
Yeah. Yeah.
This is America, damn it.
Please send your Canadian hate mail to carlsoncast@gmail.com.
Justin Trudeau, care of your mother's house.
The thing I find today with some kids, though, like coming up, like you want to help them. I like helping, you know, talking shop with people. But it seems like they're like, hey, I got this, Pops. Like, you know, like... And I remember when I was coming up, I wanted to learn from the older guys. Like, they were like a wealth of information. They were like books, you know? Mm-hmm. They would go do this and don't do that. And they were helping you, you know? But it seems like guys today, you know, they just go, I got this. I know what I'm doing.
I don't think that's unique to comedy. I think that's just that age group now. Not to sound like, you know, kids these days.
Yeah.
It is kids these days.
Yeah, I gotta agree with you, buddy.
YouTube boomers.
I know. And I'm not knocking nobody. It just seems that's the way it is.
Yeah,
you're not wrong.
It is,
you're not wrong. Like, if you could, let me ask you this question, because we do have a lot of young comics who watch this show. What do you see as the biggest mistake young comics make these days, like that you see a lot? Because I know there's a lot of things.
Sleeping with the wait staff.
What's that?
He's just sleeping with the wait staff.
There's a kid.
We have one.
There's
viewer.
A kid.
We have one viewer.
There's a kid in town. I'm gonna tell you right now. Wishes you were here a couple months ago.
Really? No, really? Yeah.
Yeah. Mark had to teach straighten somebody out. Had to have a conversation.
Oh, that's funny.
And I'm not. That's the conversation I'm not having with Mark Ippolito. I just want you to know that.
Yeah.
I'm not
good with this.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're
no,
okay.
No one's worried about you doing that, Vinny.
I know. Let alone the only people who's really worried is the wait staff.
Oh, that's funny.
But you're right. That's a big one. That's a big one. Be professional.
Yeah, show up on time. Like, do your time. I think a lot of guys, like, they want, not only, I'm not saying today, it happened when I was coming up. Like, they go, oh, I want to show this guy I can headline. And they go, do 25. And then the guy does 40. That's not going to get you back in the club. They're going to go, you know what? You got to listen. You got to get off when you're supposed to get off. Like, and you shouldn't, like, jam the guy behind you. You know, like, they're always going, oh, I'm going to try and blow this guy away. Like, just do a good show. Like, you'll get your chance, but don't, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So that's off stage. Same question, but on stage. You see anything, any bad habits that make you nuts out of young comics?
If they swear where it's not needed, you know, like if you're just dropping F-bombs just to drop them where they don't even belong. Because it loses its thing after a while.
It loses its punch.
Yeah, you lose your, you know.
A good swear can be an amazing punch.
Yeah,
it can be an amazing punchline if you just time it right and nobody sees it coming.
Yep.
It's a laugh, but it's also overused. So I'm totally on board with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've toned down my, I was never super sweary, but I toned it down a bit. And I found it works better.
You get a lot more work, you know, like you get, you know, how are you going to get on TV or, you know, I mean, cable lets you get away with a little more now, but I mean, it'll get you out of the clubs, you know, you'll get corporate stuff, you could do ships, you know.
I'm not even talking about that, I'm just talking about like, it. I get bigger laughs,
oh,
you know,
good.
Back
don't believe
them. And then once you throw in an F-bomb.
Yeah, then
it
works.
It gets
better
a reaction.
Because you're not doing
you
it every
never get a reaction.
20 seconds.
Allow me to tell you what I really like about your act. what I really like about you, Rocky. You're very simple and to the point. Your jokes are excellently crafted. They are great setup, punch, and you don't have to say a lot of words.
That's what
I really appreciate about your act. You could paint a picture, and you don't have to talk and ramble around these long, giant premises. Like, you are pow, and I love that. That's my favorite type of comedy.
I feel like this is an attack on me.
You're a bore.
No, you know what, my friend?
Go drive truck.
Drive truck. Oh, good.
Go drive truck.
No, you know what?
I'm sure they'll love your stories on the CB.
Well, a lot of times, like, my friends, when we write, like, I help edit for them. Like I don't know. Like, I always like, cut the fat, man. I want to get to it. You know what I mean? Like, you don't need these hour-long setups, you know? That's sort of just what I think, you know? But that's, I don't know. I just find that it's funnier to write that way. It's like, that's a lot of fat in there. Get rid of that junk.
Guys who do really short jokes like you, like, you're not, I wouldn't call you a one-liner comic, but a lot of really short jokes. Mm-hmm. I think it would be interesting for our viewers to know, like, how do you remember all that stuff? Like, when you're doing 45 minutes, because when I do 45 minutes, it's
one story.
It's 25 jokes.
Oh, I see.
When you do 45 minutes, it's probably 100.
Yeah. Well, you know, I try to write a bit, like a chunk, but I'll try and put a bunch of little jokes inside that chunk. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, so, I don't know. I guess maybe it's like trying to remember a song, like all the words to a song.
I like to call it LPM. Yeah. He likes to have maximum LPMs. Laughs per minute.
Yeah.
That should be the goal. I don't know why it's ever like in question. It should be the goal. You want to keep people laughing as much as possible in your time, because that's what makes you an undeniably good comic.
That helps you
have
TV.
People going with you.
Yeah, when I did the Tonight Show, they say try for a laugh like every 10 to 12 seconds. So that was my rule of thumb, you know. So I think I had the perfect set for television, you know.
I'm writing that down, because I got to be honest with you, I don't want to forget that, because if you're watching this and you're a comic and you're structuring an act right now, 10 to 12 seconds, just process that and think about it a little bit, because that is really great advice, and it sounds terribly hard to do, but it should be the goal. It should be the goal. Don't ignore it. Don't like walk past it. That should be the goal. Go for it.
I think things started changing, like, when Jeanine Garofalo and, like, all that alternative comedy came, where people, you would just do these, you know, and I think that would work on the coast, like the East or the West Coast, where you could do these long setups and stuff like that. But I think in the Midwest, people, they're not going to pay to take a half hour to get to the punchline, you know? Like, you got to keep them entertained along the way, you know? And
you brought up, like, the regional comedy, like, there are definitely styles. I've played the South a lot. It's definitely a very different style than playing up north. Yeah. What would you say the biggest difference that you've noticed, like, say, between the Midwest and here? I mean, is it the fact that they don't give you that time to, like, stretch your legs? I mean,
I think most of the Midwest, like, it seems like in the bigger cities you have less time. You have to get to it quicker.
Yeah.
Where in, like, smaller markets, they'll give you, you know, the time to ease into it.
I was thinking smaller markets, they're happier that you're just there.
It's like the circus is coming to town. It's a big deal. Yeah, you're right about that.
Yeah.
They appreciate you coming.
Yeah.
The thing about this job, though, it's the highs and lows are
unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. You could be up here one day, you have a development deal, and then the next day you're, you know, working Rochester.
Welcome.
You're
white knuckling on an airplane flying over Lake Ontario.
Yeah,
exactly.
No, like, but I mean,
I can't wait to check my voicemail. Maybe NBC did call again.
You want to know something? I did the Tonight Show, right? They pick you up in a limo. I got a standing ovation.
I know
Tonight
you did.
Show.
Amazing.
Yeah, it was a great thing. I'm not even kidding. 5 days later, I was doing this gig. It was up at a fire hall in the mountains in Pennsylvania. And I get off the plane, and I didn't know it was a daytime thing. And I had sweats on, and they go, come on, we got to go right now. They're waiting. I guess it was these people, it was their 50th anniversary. So all these people there were in their 70s. And they go, we got to go right now. I'm in some lady's basement in Pennsylvania, and I'm washing my head in her sink, and she's ironing my shirt. And I was going, I was on a Tonight Show last week. I was in a limo. Now I'm in somebody's basement in Pittsburgh. And I was like, Man, what a ride, you know what I mean?
And that is the business.
That's the business.
When I was doing research about you, I saw a lot of people refer to you as blue-collar comedy. How do you feel about that label? I've always wondered about that. Like, cause it sucks to be like labeled.
Yeah.
But do you like that label or?
Yeah, I think I think that's the whole country. I think we're most of the country's blue collar people, and that's you know, like when I grew up, all my friends, that's what they were, like cops, firemen, garbage men, truck drivers. You know, I drive the truck.
And I'll do the callbacks around here, Laporte.
And you know, I think it's a good label. I'm proud of that label. You know, it's like they said, like Bruce Springsteen was like the blue collar guy in New Jersey. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's who I represent. Like, that's where I came from, you know?
Yeah. I don't see why anybody would look at that as like a problem. I think I would look at it as a compliment because it means people embrace you.
You're a regular guy, you know? You're a regular guy.
Yeah, and if you're getting labeled, it means that people have embraced you enough to be like, yeah.
Yeah, right?
Maybe. I don't know. I'm just trying to make Brian feel dumb.
Yeah, well, so you said before the show that was a great question. Now you just kicked me in the balls over it.
Is that on tape? Do you have that on tape anywhere? I'm just wondering. Because I got video footage right now, kid. You toured with two of my all-time favorite comedians. By miles, two of my all-time favorites. People who know me, when they ask me this, I tell them all the time. I love Drew Carey. I love Ron White.
Oh,
love them both. I love both of their styles. A little different, but I love them both.
They're both great guys.
I need to know. They are both completely insane off stage.
Yeah.
You got any good stories you want to fill us in on? Nothing that'll get you in trouble?
No, because I want to work with them again.
Right. So I can't.
They're good guys.
Like,
they're...
Drew Carey's pretty open about the nonsense he gets into, which is pretty amazing for being the host of The Price is Right. He's like, I went to the LSD festival. It was amazing.
He reeled it in, though, a lot. Like, when he was younger, I think he was a little crazier. We went to Iraq together, Drew, and he's just a good dude. He's a patriot, and, you know, he's just a good guy.
Former Marine. People don't know that about him.
Yeah. And I went with Blake Clark. Blake was in Vietnam. Blake was a medic, an Army medic.
I didn't know that.
I had no idea.
Yeah. He went down twice. I think he was in two helicopter crashes.
Yeah, but did he ever get shot for $8?
Probably not.
Yeah. Well, who's the real hero, Rocky?
Of course.
Come on.
Yeah, come on.
Who's the real hero? Again, send your hate mail to Carlson Cast.
Care of Brian Ball. So but when you go overseas, like, that is that terrifying? Is it like...
You're happy. We were there 2 weeks before they caught Saddam Hussein. We're in his hometown of Tikrit, and it was pretty hairy, like hearing, you know, gunfire 24/7, and you know,
like playing Detroit.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I said. Like, I go, you think it's bad here? I was just in Detroit for 2 weeks, you know.
You
hear all this gunfire, but yeah, it was just great. It was a good thing to do. Like, you feel good when you come back from there, you know, to do that for those guys. And
win. Yeah, I've always wanted to do one of those. So. Yeah, it does seem like a great thing to do.
It sure is.
Listen, we'll pay to send you overseas. I don't know if the USO wants to have anything to do with it, but we'll get you there, buddy, if you really want to.
I don't know if they'd let me back in the country once I got out.
Yeah, I mean, I know we're pulling out of Syria, but it doesn't mean you can't pull right in.
Did you have to do a lot of, you know, helicopter flying, all that kind of stuff?
That's how we got, 90% of our stuff was in helicopters going base to base, you know. And
body armor and all that crap.
Yeah. We were at this Al Rashid Hotel one time in Baghdad, and we left at 5:45. And at 6 a.m, it got hit with a mortar round, like one side of the building. Like, they had a mortar flying through the fifth floor.
Holy shit!
That was kind of hairy, like missing it by 15 minutes.
I know that's where CNN stays all the time. They always
is that right?
Yeah, they always say that same hotel name.
I felt safer out in the desert, like way out. You know, we were in.
Oh tents, yeah.
Because you could see stuff coming from miles away, like in the city. I didn't. Mm-hmm. Feel safe, but you know.
How many times have you done that? You've done
twice.
Wow.
Two. Yeah. Then I don't know. It's good to do, but you're happy to be home too, and you know, you want all our troops home too at some point. You know. Yeah.
And again, a crowd that's happy to have you there.
Yeah, they're good people. They're happy to have you. You know. You bring a slice of home to us. You know. Yeah. It's good to do.
Now. You're no stranger to national television, obviously, with The Tonight Show, but how was your experience with Last Comic Standing? How did that go for you?
Oh, boy.
I'm just curious. I mean, because that show seems like a stressful.
It was.
A stressful nightmare, to be honest.
It is. It took months to shoot. And then the thing I didn't like I knew a lot of the comics.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like pitting you against your friends. They wanted you to go, I'm funnier than Joe Blow. Like, and I go, I don't want to say that. And they go, well, you got to say it. That's how it works. Or you're not going to go on to the next round. And I didn't like that. I didn't like doing that. Because
they told
like,
you to say you were better than other people?
Yeah, you had to go into a booth and you had to challenge someone. Like, you know, as it got down to less and less, like there was 12 and then 10. And then you had to go against someone, like, one-on-one. So you had to say, I think I'm funnier than blah, blah, blah. And if that person got the most votes, that's who you had to go against, you know?
Mm.
And then what I didn't know, like, in the beginning, you signed, like, 40 pages of paperwork. You don't pay attention to what you're signing. It's like buying a house. You don't read everything. And so at the end, when you came in the top five, we had to do a three-month tour on a bus. Like, it was... That was hard, being on a tour bus for 3 months with all those people.
That would be a better show. Would be the tour bus with the five guys for 3 months than the way that Last Comic Standing's formatted.
Yeah. Well, remember they used to put them in a house. Do you remember that? And everybody wanted to kill each
other. Oh, yeah, yeah. They're early, house. It was like the first two or three seasons.
So after doing that show, you can't treat comedy like they do like musical performances, can you? It really just shouldn't be treated that way. Like, they kind of took the American Idol model and tried to slap it on comedy. It's kind of insulting to comedy.
Yeah, yeah. Music you can do anywhere, I think, where comedy, you got to pay attention. Like, you just can't put it up anywhere, you know? I remember one time they were doing a promotion. We're in Florida. They had us go on the beach. People are playing volleyball. There's boats going. There was like those planes coming by with the banners. Like, there couldn't be more distraction. It was in the middle of the day.
The worst part was the banner said, pay attention.
Yeah,
this really didn't help.
Pretty much. And it was just like...
Turn around.
Yeah. You can't do comedy anywhere. It's got to be, you know, people got to pay attention. It's got to be, you know, it's challenging at times. It ain't as easy as people think.
And, you know, you've been around, you know, you were there for the boom when everybody was trying to take comedy and just shove it everywhere they can because it was looked like a moneymaker. Yeah. I got to ask you, what was, like, your biggest hell gig?
Oh, man, it was a few. I remember one time. Oh, man, I don't know. I remember one time we're in, it was in San Diego, and they go, hey, they did a show, like it was a radio remote at 5 a.m. on a Saturday. Mm-hmm. And all these people were out from the night before. It was a Friday night crowd at 5 a.m. And they were bombed out of their minds. And just
the March of the Walking Dead.
People were like throwing up in the club. And they were just drunk. It was just drunks, you know. And they go, hey, we're going to have a food drive, like a canned food for the homeless. So this was before they had flip tops and all that stuff. So everybody's bringing these canned goods in, and these homeless people come there. Nobody had a can opener. Like, are you kidding me?
Logistics.
Now we have to have a can opener drive. You know, and it was just, I really think that it had something to do with like them starting to have pop top. You remember, like they didn't the old cans. Like you needed a can opener to open them, and you know, I felt you know these poor homeless guys. They go, you know, I got beans and I can't open them. You know, they're trying to break them on the curb.
Just trying to crack a tooth
like,
on it.
Oh my God! Like that was awful. Then one time in Atlanta, we're doing some like a private like a liquor distributor rented the club out, and it was for all their employees, so they weren't throwing anybody out. And these people were ripped, and this lady came on stage, and I guess they were having a joke off before I came up, and she goes, "I didn't get to tell my joke," and she's bombed, and I was literally on stage for 2 minutes, and everybody's going, "Let her tell the joke," you know. So I'm like, okay, you can tell a joke, but then you got to sit down and be quiet. So she grabs the mic off of me, which is, you know, if you give someone the mic, then they got control, then you're kind of screwed.
Yeah.
And she's so hammered that she can't even talk right.
Oh, goodness.
So people start booing. They're starting to boo her. And I go, give me the mic back. And she's like, no. And then she's starting to swear at me. I go, give me the mic. And now it was like a scene in a movie. The crowd's getting madder. They start throwing napkins and stuff. And as I'm trying to get the mic, now things are getting bigger.
It's really
bigger.
Hard to throw a napkin.
Yeah, well, that was like, boo, get
they
off.
They were wrapped rocks.
Well, then it started getting bigger. Now they're starting to throw candles. It's like getting like, I go, this is insane. So we just, I'm trying to get the mic off of her, and we fell. We fell on the stage floor in the whole place. It was like a, it was like Animal House. It was like a food fight. All these drunk people are throwing stuff, and it was.
Were they throwing stuff at her or you?
They were just throwing it in the air or throwing it at the stage.
Because if they were throwing it at her, I would have just left.
Yeah. Enjoy the mic. Good luck. I'll see you in 20 minutes. Yeah. I should have let her have the stage. Yeah. And the guy's up in the balcony giving me, he's like, get off, get off. And I get off stage, and the president of this company, this liquor company, he's bombed out. He goes, that was great. I'm like, I wrestled with one of your employees. Like, nothing even had to tell jokes.
There's going to be a lawsuit. You're getting sued on Monday.
He gave me a $200 bonus. He goes, that was great. I'm like, well, I didn't do nothing. I wrestled with I was just like.
God bless liquor companies.
You wrestled with Linda from HR.
Pretty much. Pretty much.
Every place has a Linda from HR.
Yeah. And then, you know what's so weird? Like, we're out there trying to give a gift. You know, like, you want to go out there and make people laugh. And some audiences, they just ain't having it, man. Ain't that something like how they just, it's like they hate you or something like that.
I hate the audiences. My least favorite are, and you get it more now, I think, with, again, talking about younger crowds and stuff.
I'm winding up right here. Finish that sentence.
They paying attention. They're happy to be there. They're just too cool to laugh.
They're looking on their phone.
Yeah, and you sit there and you perform to almost silence, and then you walk off and it's like, man, you were great. You were so funny. And I'm like, why the hell didn't you laugh then?
Yeah. You know, the Comedy Works in Denver. They have a thing now where you when you go in, you have to shut your phone off, the ringer, and you put it in a case and they lock it. And you can't, they just ask you, just pay attention for 90 minutes. If you need to make a call, you go in the lobby and they'll unlock it. But I heard Chappelle's doing that now, and there's a couple other clubs that are doing it. I think that's a great idea.
How much those things cost? Yeah. I mean, that's a big expense.
Well, you get them back. You know, you just have to buy them.
Well, you still have to
put the case is a big expense.
Yeah. No, I understand that.
You probably buy about 300, you know, if that's what your room holds, and, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, you get them back at the end of the night. But
I think it's a good idea. And somebody's job is to stand there and lock everybody's phones? Wow.
But you know what? Why are you coming to the show if you don't want to pay attention? Like, if you're going to sit in the front row and do this and the light, it's like, that's ignorant. You know what I mean?
It is ignorant because, once again, you paid for a show. Enjoy it.
Yeah.
Enjoy it. Now,
he's looking at his watch. I think he wants to get out of here.
Please leave. Be my guest.
I'm trying to turn the damn thing off, honestly.
I have the worst co-host.
I'm going to take it off and throw it at you.
That's good. The guest comments. Yeah, the co-host is looking at his watch, and I'm the problem. He's going to throw it at me.
We're just talking about audience members that weren't paying attention. He's like,
it was good timing on my part. I was trying to emphasize your comment about how rude it is to do that.
Yeah, you're good stuff. Good stuff. So Rocky's going to be here for four more shows this weekend. Don't forget to get your tickets, carlsoncomedy.com, 585-484-0265 if you have questions for him. I guess I just want to ask you this because I really do. I'm one of those people who does like to learn from people who have been doing it and making a living at comedy. I care very much about their opinion. So let me ask you this question. It's 2019, Rocky Laporte. If you were that 29-year-old truck driver right now and decided you were going to get into comedy, in 2019, knowing everything that you know now, where would you start? What would be the first steps for you?
Open mic nights, you know, learning your craft. And, you know, I guess the internet today is like being on a Tonight Show in the 70s. You know, it's like it's that big now.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if TV can give you that boost anymore.
I don't feel like there's a kingmaker on late night anymore.
You're right. Yeah, I think you're
right. I've been trying to think who, if there is one, who would it be? Colbert? It's not Fallon. I don't think the Tonight Show is what it was for stand-up anymore.
Yeah, I'd say it's Conan or Colbert.
Maybe Conan. I might give it to Conan because Conan's like a little more respected in comedy circles. Yeah. I mean, nothing against Colbert, but Conan's kind of an institution.
But I know guys that've been on there like 5-8 times and nobody knows who they are. They're just another face in the crowd, you know? It seems like the internet's where you get your traction now, you know?
Yeah.
So maybe the goal that maybe in 1989 was late night. It's not the goal anymore. So
yeah, it's a good credit to have. It's good to have TV credits, you know, but that'll get you work in the clubs. But it seems like most people are internet sensations. You know?
I wonder how long that's going to last. That TV credits matter anymore. You know, it's going to become, do you have a Netflix half hour? Do you have...
But I think you can only be good in a club. That's how you learn your craft. Like, I don't think there's a shortcut. Like, the internet's not a short... You got to go out and do the work, man. You know?
Yeah, like you alluded to earlier, you get these guys who... Yeah, they sell out clubs, but they've got 15 minutes.
Yep.
And then they just get up there and mess around for the next 40.
And how long is it going to last? Like, who's going to pay to see that again a second time? You know, you gotta entertain the people, you know?
Yeah. So if we're talking building a career from the ground up, where does the internet come in for you, you think?
You know what? I have a company that does my, I'm not internet savvy at all.
Sure.
I just make my little stupid videos and I send it to them and, you know, I'll make some jokes and I send it to them and they post it because they know all the hashtags. I'm a dinosaur, man. I don't know about that junk and, you know.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'd rather be writing jokes than hanging out on the internet, you know, with doing stuff like that. But I'll reply to my fans and stuff like that, you know, but I'm not on there as much as, you know,
so I guess
most
the,
people.
The overall lesson here would be your craft.
Learn your, do you be good at your job. Learn your craft, man, you know.
The fundamentals are still the fundamentals.
Absolutely. There's no, you know what I mean?
This it's like flying is a microphone. A plane.
You know what I mean? It's like, no, there's no shortcut. You got to learn how to fly, right? Like, you got to do it every day and get good at it. You know, there's no shortcuts, you know?
Well, thank you, Rocky, for coming in today. It's a real pleasure having you on the show. And I'm looking forward to seeing you this weekend. I'm not sure if I'm coming tonight or tomorrow night yet, but I'm looking forward to checking out your show
man.
In person.
Good.
And folks, you could do the same. Tickets on sale now. 585-484-0265 or carlsoncomedy.com is the easiest way. Go on there. Tickets are available right on the front page. So we're going to be back without Ross Johnson. Brian and I are going to attempt to do the news. Stay tuned. Thank you for being awesome and watching another episode of the Carlson Cast. Don't forget we're streaming live on Facebook and YouTube every Friday morning. You could also follow us on social media on Twitter and Instagram at Carlson Cast. You can listen anytime on iTunes, Google Play, and we're now available on Spotify. You should also check out an amazing app called Laughable. And on the Laughable app, you can connect to your favorite comedians in a way you never thought you could before. Download it in the App Store and visit carlsoncast.com for information on more shows. And don't be a jerk. Rate and review. Well, we are back, and there is still no Ross Johnson.
No Ross.
Again, you're welcome. But I, in his honor, will start the news the same way he does.
And it will be current.
And it will be current. you know, usually when he's not here, we don't do news. We don't even bother.
Yeah.
But there's two stories that we kind of wanted to talk about. One, you could hit my PC cam, or PC Joe. He's running it. Yeah. R.I.P. John Witherspoon.
Yeah. That's sad.
That guy, I didn't know he was 77 years old. Dynamo.
Wow, he was 77.
77 years old.
I would have guessed like 60-something.
And you may, you could switch back to me. You may know him from Friday. Obviously, he was the father in Friday. He was Uncle Robert on the Boondocks. Was that his name?
Yeah, I think so.
He did some really amazing stuff. Like, he's been in a million movies. In Living Color, he was on. He was in a million different things. And he was, above all that, most importantly, an amazing stand-up.
And by all accounts, a sweet guy.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah.
Very, very sweet guy.
Yeah.
He never got to come to the Carlson, which just makes us sad. You know, that's a guy that we would have loved to have had here.
Yeah, yeah.
We actually had him booked, and I believe there was an issue with the routing, and we had to, like, postpone it. It is definitely postponed now.
Yeah.
But
eternally.
It is eternally postponed. If you have your tickets, you might want to call Mark at the club.
Yeah.
But he did come and play the old club in Webster, and I got to see him there perform. And I have to tell you, the line just to shake this man's hand went all the way around the room. Like, nobody left. They all wanted to stay and shake his hand and tell him how much they loved him. And I'll never forget that because it doesn't happen that often.
Yeah.
He was a genuinely beloved performer. So RIP John, fly.
Yeah.
I don't know what else to say. Brian, you have a story that you want to talk about.
I do. And you actually posted this on Facebook is how I learned about it.
Right. So good open.
Very good. A very good comment about, we talk a lot on the show about like the woke culture and PC stuff and cancel culture and all that. Hey, as comedians, that's a concern of ours. Very unique voice came out, kind of knocking it down. That voice being former President Barack Obama.
Yeah, he's a person.
Which was not expecting he'd be the one to come out and say, calm down, everybody.
What a boomer. What a boomer. His comments, I don't want to like interrupt you, but I just have to say his comments were like kind of out of the blue, like you said.
Yeah.
But so refreshing. And so refreshing.
So inarguably reasonable is the words that I would use to describe
that should
it.
Be the man's epitaph.
That should be. That's what his presidency was. It was just inarguably reasonable.
Yeah, it's arguable. People will argue. But either way, all I'm saying is whether you like the man or hate the man,
yeah,
his comments are great. Go ahead, Brian.
So what he said was, and I'm gonna not read the whole thing, obviously. It's like a 3 or 4 minute video. You can find it on Yahoo News. This idea of purity and you're never compromised, you're always politically woke and all that stuff, you should get over that quickly. The world is messy. There are ambiguities. People who do really good stuff have flaws.
Yeah.
I don't see how you can argue with that.
Yeah.
I don't see how you can.
Yeah.
And he went on to say, like if I tweet or hashtag about how you didn't do something right or use the wrong verb, then I can sit back and feel pretty good about myself because I can say, man, see how woke I was? I called you out. I'm going to get on TV, watch my show. And then he plugged a show. You know, that's not activism. That's not bringing about change. If all you're doing is casting stones, you're probably not going to get that far.
That was quite a dramatic reading.
Yes.
If anyone's still listening, thank you. what I really have to say there is, it is something to chew on from somebody who people listen to.
Yeah.
So hopefully that'll start a dialogue and maybe have a few. I think this makes no effect on society whatsoever. His comments change no one's mind about anything. I feel like the trenches are dug a little too deep at this point. But it was nice to hear.
I don't know if there was anyone who could say something that might pull someone out of a trench. It might be him. I think he's so well
actually,
respected.
Brian,
still,
it was John Witherspoon. John Witherspoon is the only one who could have saved us. We're all doomed. That's today's episode of the Comedy at the Carlson Cast. Thanks to Rocky Laporte, who's here for 4 more shows this weekend. Get your tickets 585-4-COMEDY or visit carlsoncomedy.com. We love you. Remember, until we talk to you next week, with our guest is going to be Bobby Slayton. I believe we're going to be here Thursday morning. The Pitbull. Love that guy. This will be his 3rd appearance on the show. He is our first 3-time guest. Brian has to bake him a cake or something. But until we are back, remember, act right.